The On Podcast is brought to you by... Aw, yeah. Emma's back, baby.
The On Podcast is brought to you by Emma, email marketing that works for you.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Celebrate good times. Come on. Can I sing that without getting dinged?
I don't think you can. I think that's...
What about, don't call it a comeback?
No,
will LL come after me?
I hope so. That'd be awesome.
That would be very cool. That would be very cool. Oh my goodness gracious. As you heard in the intro, guess who's back? Oh, there goes my phone. Guess who's back? That's
who's
right.
Who's back, Scott? Who's back?
Oh my goodness. Emma has returned. Can I get a round of applause whenever in the other? There we go. Yeah. Oh, I've been so lonely.
I know, you have.
So lonely.
You wouldn't even see other sponsors, like even casually.
No, I couldn't. I wouldn't even go out to a little mixer.
No.
I wasn't interested in it.
I know, you weren't interested in anyone else.
I've been sitting at the sponsor window, raining. It's been raining for a year.
So sad.
Listening to Michael Bolton, wondering.
Staring at pictures of yourself in an Emma t-shirt.
Mm. Yeah, dreaming. I've lost some weight, yeah.
You need new t-shirts.
I do need new shirts. Emma has returned as the one, the only sponsor of the On Podcast. Emma went and worked out a bit.
I think it was us.
I don't think, trainer.
I don't think it was Emma. I think it was us. Yeah, we polished things up. We made ourselves look a little bit better.
Got a haircut.
They ran into us.
Yeah,
the post office.
You look great.
You look
good. I'm like, great. Yeah. Oh, you. Yeah, you look good. How are you?
Yeah. How's it going, Emma?
Good. Hi. What you been up to? You sponsoring anybody else? Just curious. Oh, you are? Okay, cool. Yeah. No. I just want you to be happy. That's all we wanted was Emma to be happy and become our sponsor again.
And they're back.
And they have. And goodness, we do have plans this year until they cancel. It's going to be great. We're going to be going down to Nashville, holding a live Unpodcast on location there.
So exciting.
And I'm thinking pulled pork's going to be involved somehow.
Absolutely.
And books and awesomeness. We're going to work on some events together. We're going to do, we're going to take over their Facebook page once a month. Good Lord Almighty. They don't know what's coming. And then we're going to do a couple on webinars through the year. So many things to give
it's
away.
It's going
to
be great.
So many things to talk about.
I think
about.
This time we're going to make it, you know? I think this is forever.
Mm. I'm just afraid to get hurt again.
I know.
And it may happen. So the story behind Emma, before we get into everything else, is they got bought. Right, so what happened is everything, and those of you that have been dealt with acquisitions and mergers and takeovers, a lot of things happen, and they said a campaign monitor ended up buying them, and a partner of theirs beforehand had decided it was so good together that they decided to merge, get married. So Emma's back, new style of logo, new tagline. I didn't even say the tagline.
You didn't say the tagline.
Oh my goodness, Emma. Email marketing that works for you.
Come on, we just got back together.
I've already screwed it up. I'm so... Please don't leave. Please. So lonely. So they're back. So we're very excited for that. So let's hop in and get some value out of them coming back. If you want to do that, please thank them. Because they have come back and returned. So we got some stuff today. We're going to talk about Amazon. Another new retail thing from Amazon. We got... something Allison found today, which is fantastic to do with influencers. You're going to enjoy it. And then we're going to talk about the topic of students and presenting and how impactful in business that is, and should we be making them present in front of their peers. All that and nothing more.
Brought to you by
Emma. Email marketing that works for you.
I'm a little concerned that I've never seen you that happy before. Like, I feel like... Like, I should make you as happy as getting back together with Emma does, but I'm going to let it go.
Well, Lions beat the Patriots last week, so I was very happy about
That's
that.
True. Yeah. So I actually saw this morning, mm-hmm. and I sort of have mixed feelings about it. When I first started reading it, I was like, this is insane. This is ridiculous. This is bad for people in general. But as I read it, I kind of realized that maybe it's not so bad. So let me hear what you think about it. It's from the New York Times, and the title is A Penthouse Made for Instagram. And the story talks about, so it says, this penthouse apartment, and there's a photo, in Manhattan's Soho neighborhood, is awash with natural light, with high ceilings, gleaming hardwood floors, and a rooftop deck. The living room area includes a sofa in the rosy hue known as millennial pink. The kitchen comes equipped with floor-to-ceiling wine fridge, and the library nook is filled with books chosen for their appearance, not for their contents. The white walls are spotless, and there is never any clutter. And then it says, nobody lives here. So basically, to sum up this article, this penthouse apartment, which is in one of the nicest neighborhoods, most expensive neighborhoods, where you and I often stay and walk around in New York City, it's 2,400 square foot, which is huge. I mean, it's almost as big as our house.
Especially for New York, yeah.
And no one lives there. So it's basically you can rent it out. And the target of renting it out are Instagram influencers are renting out this apartment for photo shoots, right? That picture of, oh, I woke up like this and they're lying on a bed and the blankets, the duvets white and perfect lights coming in. That may be from this apartment, the millennial pink sofa where you can sit beside your book nook and read a book that it only is chosen to match. It has nothing to do with what's inside the book. And they actually rent it for $15,000 a month. I don't know if they rent it by the month, but that's what it says the rent is, $15,000 a month.
That's cheap for New York for that size.
And the thing that's interesting is, so it was actually opened in August, just a couple months ago, by Village Marketing, which is an agency that connects advertisers with companies, so with influencers, social media influencers. And basically part of their offering is saying, so we're going to, let's say you're very influential on Instagram and we want you to help sell coffee or furniture or something. You come use this apartment for your photo shoots. And it's actually been entirely furnished by Wayfair and styled by Wayfair, which is a large online giant marketplace, yeah, which has a lot of furniture and stuff. It says like the breakfast in bed, like that's a very popular picture, mm-hmm, there where you sit in the all white duvet and you've got your tray and you're eating breakfast and you're just so incredibly relaxed. There's iconic wallpaper, in quotes, big windows with lots of light. And it says that one of the examples, say Mariana Hewitt, who has more than 800,000 Instagram followers, recently took photos in the penthouse and hosted an event there. So you can also use it like, it kind of seems like you're having an event in your own house. So let's say you want, mm-hmm, pictures that seem like you're inviting people over to your house and you're all trying out some new product, except it's not your house. It's this perfectly planned apartment. And there's like a perfect bathroom if you want to promote beauty products. There's a spotless kitchen if you want to, you know, promote some new, you can't cook there. So we're not talking about like a working kitchen. But, you know, if you want to like have a picture of you with your morning coffee, right, you could take it in the perfect kitchen.
Right.
And there's a deck. So there's things outside. It says there people take yoga class pictures on this balcony, dinner parties framed on the balcony and everything. So my question is, like, to me, when I started reading this, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Because so many people see Instagram photos and think that that's real. Like, that this is really someone's apartment. How is it possible? Like, you could rent this and go in with your kids, mm-hmm, and have, like, a fake play date with a bunch of other kids. And it was not real. It's not the way a real house looks. Mm-hmm. So do you think that there's something wrong with that? Or do you think it's the same, like, if you were a TV show, would film on a set? It's basically a set.
It's the real life, yeah, type of thing. Yeah,
built,
yeah,
for Instagram.
Right.
And it doesn't say if people have to, like, do you think people should have to say that they're using a fake kitchen?
I don't know. Do you have to disclose that when you say, I just woke up looking like this, like woke up like this and you didn't? Like, it's, you get so past that. Now, first of all, my first question is, who pays for the apartment? Like, if I'm going to use it, like, am I requested to come in and the brand pays for the session? I know that it's $15,000 a month, but I wonder if, you know, the influencer is like
the one like flipping the bill for it.
Right. So I assume it's the brand if they want their, unless the influencer says, I want to come use this. And like, it just depends on the point of leverage. But it doesn't surprise me. I don't, like, you get people posing in front of rental cars, you know, in front of their Lambo.
Yeah. We've done a thing with an airplane, right? Yeah, wasn't right? there an airplane, yeah, you could rent, an airplane take you pictures can rent, take on
pictures.
It?
Everything you see on Instagram, you know, you've got to take with a grain of salt. And the problem is when you start claiming this is yours, like, hey, check out my success. this is my place in Manhattan.
Yeah, that's, see,
that's
a
where you
bit.
Start. So the problem is, it just, you just go down this slippery influencer slope. And I don't want to take away from people who are influencers. We've gained many of things. I'm looking in this room right now from being, quote, influencers. You know, we were, especially early on in the days of Twitter, we got a lot of stuff, a lot of free stuff, Disney trips, like a whole bunch of, we got free cars for a summer to test drive these things that no normal person would have gotten. So I understand the influencer side of things. The problem is we are, okay, look, I need to disclose that it's nothing new. That we're setting up a standard that is not achievable, attainable, or even true. That's not, it's not been invented by influencers. The problem now is that these influencers, one of their appeals to their audience is that I'm just like you.
Yeah, like a real person.
Versus a celebrity. Versus it was Kathy Ireland here. You're like, well, that's Kathy Ireland. Or that's Cindy Crawford. Or that's Brad Pitt. And,
you just really dated yourself by the women
I
you
did,
named.
Very much so. But I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
But
no, I agree. I think that we need to understand. I think the issue is on the consumer side of things is understanding that if you're seeing something like this, that it's not really real.
Right.
You know, like this isn't really somebody's house. And I, one of the things they talk about, which is interesting, is one of the influencers who's rented the space says that when they've done photo shoots in like a proper studio, that it looks too good.
Right.
So it's sort of a trick, yeah. Right? Because you want it to look real, yeah. But perfect. And there's no such thing as real and perfect. So it's, I don't know. I'm more into cautioning people when they're looking at things like this, just like a model on the cover of a magazine is photoshopped or airbrushed, that this is almost like an airbrushed life. Like you basically have taken this idea that you're being shot in your home, but it's not a real house. It's like a airbrushed version that you rented for, you know, a day to right. do a photo shoot.
Well, like I said, this is one of the most watched shows decades ago was Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, right? Robin Leach. It was just like, we love looking at things that are some mostly unattainable for most people. Rest in peace, Robin Leach. And so that's always been there. But the problem is these are no longer, it's a celebrity's house and going through the whole thing. Now it's like, this is Carrie, the Instagram person that you have followed for years, and she's here now. And that's, then you realize the unattainable you think is attainable when actually the unattainable isn't even there. It's not real.
No, it's not real.
And that's the problem I have where it, especially because it's so skewed to youth. It's so skewed to the younger demographic. And we have five of the younger demographic. And they're saying, oh, well, this is what I could, I just have to do a few things here and I can have this. Well, first of all, the person you're looking at doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Right, in the first place. So that's where it concerns me more, is we're creating this not only unattainable level of beauty when it comes to photoshopping and filters and everything else, but unattainable of success. And then is success a 2,500 square foot apartment in New York? Right. So it's just like there's a big, huge kind of macro thing that goes along with it. But is this, you know, it's a pure agency move.
And I was thinking about it in terms of like, we're not going to talk about it quite yet, but when we talk about the issue of presenting and being a speaker. So one of the things that we have worked on in the past is we did some filming for documentary in the past, right? And we used like a, was it a WeWork or some, it wasn't a WeWork. It was Julian's company that now I can't remember the name of it.
Breather.
And so we were doing these interviews, we were filming them. And so we looked at all these breather spaces online to try and find, because we needed a space in Toronto that we could rent for a number of hours. And these are breathers like workspaces, right, that you can rent. And we did some filming there because it looked great. And we actually, when we were choosing which one to use, we actually looked at how they would look. Yeah. And when I read this, I was thinking like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like you could do interviews there and you could film it and it would look really bright. And, you know, you could pretend that you're having like one of these parties where your friends come over and they're looking at different products that you're trying to sell. And I just want people to realize when they're looking at it that you could be looking at something that's so incredibly manufactured that even the bed they're lying on or the kitchen they're holding their coffee cup up in when they say they just woke up isn't real. And I think that's important for people to know.
Well, eventually, aren't you going to have people like, well, hang on a second, that looks like Jeff's kitchen.
That's the other thing. If enough people use it, it's going to start to look suspicious. So it was really interesting, though. I like the article.
Let's keep on disrupting here. This is actually from Amazon's page. They're saying it's called Introducing Amazon 4-Star. It says, this is last week. It says, tomorrow we're opening Amazon 4-star, a new physical store where everything for sale is rated 4 stars and above, is a top seller, or is new and trending on Amazon.com. The store is located in one of New York's most vibrant neighborhoods, Soho, on Spring Street.
Between, it's like the Soho episode. Yeah,
Crosby and Lafayette. Yes, exactly. Amazon 4-star is built around customers, our customers, what they're buying, what they're loving. Everything in the store is rated 4. We have a trending around New York City and top selling around New York City section as well. And Amazon 4-star customers can test drive Amazon devices along with smart home accessories. You can ask Alexa to turn on. It says new. And then there's like a new and trending section of toys, new and trending section of kitchenware. And then there's a live like price LED screen on each one with almost like real time level. Like this is showing a KitchenAid a mixer. It has 4.6 stars with 8,935 reviews, shows the prime price. So prime members at the store can get that 35% off. Amazon's coming strong with retail. So put them all out of business and then come back and like, we're just kidding. We're going to put some stores out now. Because they also announced at the same time, the same week, they announced potentially opening 3,000 Amazon Go stores in the United States, which is the cashierless stores as well.
So first of all, I think it's cool. But I wonder whether it's more just like a marketing thing. Because my feeling is, so you don't really know what's going to be in the store. Like the thing is, why do people go to stores? Is that usually people go to stores because they want to get a certain type of product, right? Let's say they're in the market for a standing mixer, since you mentioned the KitchenAid, so they're going to go to a store that sells standing mixers, which makes a lot of sense, right? And online, we can be way more sort of like into the serendipity of, we'll just go and see what's kind of top rated or whatever, because we don't have to get in the car and go anywhere or subway or whatever. Now, I think in a very high traffic, busy, touristy area like Soho, people will go just because they want to see what's in the store. And you might walk around and maybe kind of happen upon a particular thing that's over 4 stars that you wanted to buy. But it's not like, you're not going to know what's for sale in the store before you go there, which I always think is, I've seen a bunch of stores in New York where like they pop up, you know, and there's something cool in there and you walk around and it's neat. But it isn't something that works when there isn't like tons of traffic, right? Because it has to be that. So it seems more like a marketing thing. Like they might do a few of these stores mm-hmm. in very, very busy areas mm-hmm. and they talk about it on the website and we talk about it on the podcast and people think it's cool. But whether it would work like in our neighborhood, because why would you go there? Like you wouldn't know what was going to be in the store. Do you think people would like that?
I would like to go. Out of curiosity.
Yeah, I would like to go too.
But then, you know, this then incentivizes even more, obviously, for products to get themselves above 4 stars with fake reviews. You know,
yeah, I was reading a lot of things about that, about the reviews and like all the ways to game the review system and everything. And yeah. I mean,
It's just, and one of the things about disruption, right? It's like almost full circle here. We're going to make it better so you don't need brick and mortar stores. We're going to put them a lot of them out of business and come back and say, okay, now we got stores. Warby Parker is now opening retail showrooms, right? It's like it's
not only a store, but like a store you just go to see what's in it. Like it's not even based on looking for a specific thing. No, but
back
thing.
To it being a destination store, right? Because if it's only rated a certain amount, right, then you're just like, okay, but now it's customer curated. That's fascinating, right? Well, now, mind you, let me preface that. I understand retail somewhat, which is every store is customer curated one way or the other. If it's being bought, they will stock more. You know what I mean? Where it's like partially that way. But
plus, I wonder how many, like, I don't know the data, but I wonder, okay, so if you looked at Amazon, how many products are rated 4 stars and over? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not big enough of a store to have every single product that's rated 4. So then, because in every product, you may have 2 or 3 stores that are 4 stars and over. So then do you, like, they're still picking things that they think people are going to want to see in the store, right? It isn't entirely true.
But it's almost their social proof store, though. They're like, hey, you all love this, so here you go.
Yeah.
So obviously you're going to want this blender because everybody else wants this blender. And it's like, it's like a whole instant
pot. It's a cool idea. I kind of want to go.
Yeah, I do too. But I also want to see the cashierless one too and see how that works with all the scan and the chips and all the products and stuff too. It's fairly fascinating. You know who else is fascinating?
Who else is fascinating?
Emma.
They're so fascinating.
It's email marketing that works for you. Their award-winning team is always ready to support you on your email marketing strategy, design, list migration, and more.
How was very well done. It's been a long time since you've read one of those. I mean, made that up just purely just on the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, out of pure passion, go to Miami.com and check them out. Say hello or go to Miami.com/onpodcast. Back to our old URL we had.
We're going
to
have tons of cool stuff coming up with them. Webinars, and we're going to take over their Facebook page at least once. I mean, whether they'll let us, the idea is to do it once a month, whether they'll ever let us do it again after we do it the first time, we're not sure.
You know what I want to do? I want to take over their office.
Just like take it
for
over.
For a day, yeah, just take it over.
Could do a photo shoot, like that rental apartment in Soho, because it's a really cool office.
Check out our office. Like, here's our 160 staff for the show. Right, we got writers in one corner.
Take, like, one of those pictures, like, in front of a computer, like, inbox zero picture, and, like, all, like, sort of just, like, as if you just caught me at my desk.
Wayne's got his, like, his VP of audio office producer on it and stuff, and everybody's like, whoa. And he's got, like, 27 techs under him for two microphones for the whole show. It's going to be awesome. We're coming, Emma. We're taking it over.
So this topic is something that is near and dear to us because you are a professional speaker and we've done a lot of research and interviews and stuff about speaking in general.
I used to also teach it too at college, students speaking too.
And we have kids of the age where they very often have to do presentations in front of their class. And what we've found in the research that we've done and the people that we've talked to is that being able to stand in front of a group of people, whether it be your sales team and it's five people or hundreds and thousands of people, is like a very strong indicator of whether you're like of success. It just seems to mean that if you can do it, it opens doors for you. If you do it well, it opens even more doors for you. Like communicating to a group of people, even a small group of people, is incredibly important. It's just incredibly important in being able to do the things and succeed in almost every job. Like, I was kind of surprised when we started talking about it years ago, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to, like, mostly because you are an anomaly in that you have no fear of speaking. Most people are terrified to stand up in front of other people. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that people who are often, not often, but sometimes people with good messages and important things that need to be shared or lessons that need to be taught, they don't share them because they're too afraid to stand up in front of people. Mm-hmm. So, we really felt like it was an important thing for us to look at. And this article, and we can talk about it a little more, is talking about whether students, so children, like figure up to teenagers, up to university and college age, should be forced to do in-class presentations if they're very anxious about it. And it seems to be like different opinions about it. Some people think, no, they shouldn't have to, like shouldn't force them to do something they're really anxious about. And other people are like, no, you have to. And there's even a couple people like, there was a tweet here and it says, "Hi, coming from someone with severe anxiety, having somebody force me to do a public presentation was the best idea to happen in my life. I'll never regret having my first anxiety attack in front of a classroom of students because it'll happen and that's life."
And this was all spurned in this whole article on multiple sites about it. And it was an original tweet that was designed with kind of like an emoji, but a stick figure around it from @softedhearts. Her name's Lean. It says, "Stop forcing students to present in front of the class and give them the choice not to." It's been retweeted 132,000 times. It's been liked 406,000 times. And it's generated over 5,000 replies. It certainly was a spark.
Absolutely.
For people. You rarely see anything retweeted over 100,000 times. Like, it's incredible. It sort of certainly resonated. And for anybody just to take it and push it aside, we're not listening. And one of the things that's challenging for me as being somebody who does this for a living and somebody who has watched and coached hundreds of student presentations when I was a prof at college, it's an interesting situation because now there is a difference between being nervous and anxious and having crippling anxiety. When you're nervous getting up there, that's one thing. But if it actually a panic attack, it's a health concern for people. Is there a line? Do we allow them to opt out? And what happened when this tweet went out, there was two reactions. One was, "Thank you for saying that." The other one was a bunch of snowflakes. bunch of back in my day, I had to present in front of 10,000 people, walk during the snow upside down backwards. And then,
but that's the internet. Like, if that's just like a polarization.
You need to do tough things.
People.
Why are we coddling? Why are we doing this? And somebody who made his students all present. But here's the thing. The difference was first walking them through and giving them a frame of reference for it by saying that what the impact was to be able to speak. And if the more you speak, the better you get, if we buy into that, or the more comfortable you can get for it, the better it is for you, then why not do it in a semi-safe environment? And one of the things I did was with the curriculum, and I'm sure I wasn't supposed to do this, but with the curriculum, it was called Business Communications was the class. And each student had to do two talks, one at near the start of the semester, one at the end of the semester. And it's supposed to be some kind of marginal improvement between the two talks. And there was a list of topics on the syllabus that said, here's talk about how to write a memo, talk about how to write an email, talk about this. And they are all terrible topics. But the point was each student would teach the students in the class. And I scrapped it. And I said, I just want you to pick any topic you want, anything you love. I don't care if it's Xbox, Ferraris, steaks. I don't care if it's about a movie, a TV show, a band, whatever it is. Take something you're passionate about and talk about it for 5 minutes. And then we had them do it. And there were students who were really good, and there were students who were not good at all at it. And I told them, I was marking them based on the fact of the difference of the second presentation to the first one. That was it. Not how they're against each other, but that way. And everybody did it. And then everybody did the second one. And most of them marginally improved between the two, which is all you can ask for in any kind of skill set, right? Is just to have incremental improvements. But I never had a student come up to me and said, I have a... diagnosed with anxiety disorder, and I don't want to do this. I didn't have to face that situation, and this is over hundreds of students doing it. And so my thing is, are we honoring that by forcing them to go through it?
My only concern is just in talking to people and looking at different types of jobs, and it's not even in jobs, like even in life, in your brother gets married and like you're going to talk in front of people, or you're a real estate agent and you have to sit down in someone's home in front of 3-4 people. Being able to speak in front of people, communicate something, anything, is so vital to choices. And my concern is if you don't consider it very important, then you kind of close a lot of doors. Like, you know, being a teachers have to communicate to some of the hardest audiences in the world. Doctors have to communicate to teams. Nurses have to communicate to teams. It's really rare to find a job where you don't at some point have to stand up in front of 5 to 10 people and be able to speak to them. My hope would be that school would be a place where it would be a safe space. So where it would be understood that we all have strengths and weaknesses. Some of us are good at math. Some of us are good at reading. Some of us are talented presenters. Some of us aren't. And that exists on a huge range. But we're supposed to be together to learn how to do things as well as we can do them. And I could speak in front of audiences every day and never be able to speak in front of audiences the way that you do that. But you could do other things and never be able to do them as well as I do. That's just people. And my concern is that not in the very extreme, like crippling anxiety situation, but in the, I think I'm going to throw up, I hate doing presentations, I'm sweating, shaking, those kinds of things, doing them can make those things better. Mm-hmm. And we know professional speakers amongst our friends who had very serious anxiety when they started.
Crippling anxiety.
And their message was so important to them that they overcame that. And it doesn't mean overcame doesn't mean it goes away. They still have the anxiety when they step on stage, but they have just decided that what they need to say and the reason they're doing it on stage is more important than kind of securing themselves from that feeling of nervousness. And I feel like it's such an important tool. And that's my concern, is that I don't think we should force. That's like saying, like, if a child has a broken leg, do we force them to do gym class? You know what I mean? But most kids we force to do gym class because we decide.
They have a sore leg.
And that's where the rule is. My feeling is that everyone should have to do presentations. I just, and not because I'm trying to do tough love, but because having spoken to all these people and seeing how important it is in many aspects of life to be able to stand in front of people, I think school is a safe space to be able to practice it. And I just think it's, many kids hate math and math makes them sick to their stomach, but they should have to learn up to a certain amount of math so that they can understand their taxes and do buy groceries. Like, yeah. I just think it's important.
Yeah, I'm afraid of you give an out and say if it's, you know, if it's too, it causes too much anxiety and you don't have to do it, then I 3/4 of every class I taught would have opted out because no, I don't want to do it. I'm just
plus then when they get to their jobs.
Yeah.
Or what about the jobs they can't take because of that, or the raises they don't get because mm-hmm. they weren't able to do it? Like, you're basically giving them the first out of what will them avoiding something that is something people have to do all the time. And maybe make it personal. I said, do you want to be able to stand up and, you know, give a speech at somebody's wedding? Do you want to be able to congratulate your children when they graduate from something? Like, just standing up in front of some people makes most of us anxious.
Yeah, and I do think there's obviously some, you know, certain mental health diagnoses that I have when it comes to social anxieties or anxiety itself, or where there's certain levels of it where can you get to the point where you can speak? Sure. But is that going to be the job of your grade 10 English teacher? Are they qualified to be your person to get you that point? Maybe not. You know, so if there's a actual medical reason for it that is diagnosed, that you can then somehow get help with, because it is, and this is why we're talking about this today, is an extremely important skill in business.
It really is. It's not only in business, no. In almost every single job, an important skill.
But that's what I mean. So I mean, in business in general, in any job, any business, whether it's your own or whether you have a role, it's not even standing up. You can be sitting around a meeting. The ability to talk and be able to engage people in the room is shown. It's shown through countless surveys and data points about you are viewed differently in the office place if you can talk to a group.
I think it's so important that it should be a class unto itself. Like, that there should be classes in high school, not like Toastmasters or like the speech one for kids. I can't remember in the States. There's a big organization, mm-hmm. which I can't remember the name of right now, but I think it's such an important skill in how many people we've spoken to that it should almost be its own class, is like a public speaking class, because there are tools and methods and steps that you can take and ways to teach yourself how to do it that aren't common knowledge. You know, how do you deal with what prep can you do? What kind of ways can you plan for a talk? What helps you? Everyone's helped by different things. So, you know, maybe you're somebody who really needs to have everything written out entirely. So write everything out. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're somebody who needs to practice. Maybe you're somebody who needs to do deep breathing before you go out. My concern isn't with those that have crippling anxiety and we're talking about like a medical serious issue. My problem is with most of us who live in the middle, who end up not sharing our important ideas, not sharing the things that we want to communicate with people because we haven't learned the tools to be able to manage it. Mm-hmm. Not overcome things, just manage the anxiety. And that concerns me, because I think then we have people who are gifted speakers sharing terrible ideas and we're all just like go along with it. Like that's part of my concern, is that it keeps people with good ideas and good messages from sharing them. And I think we all suffer when those messages aren't communicated.
There's a great TED talk of I believe she is a neuroscientist, and she's walking through, she's telling the story of her having a stroke and what she was thinking during it. A neuroscientist having a stroke. And one of the best parts of the talk is she's like, I thought it was fascinating as a neuroscientist, but she rehearsed that talk for a year to get to that point. Like and by the way, when we talk about people who actually have stories to tell that are worth it, that's everybody listening right now. There's a story in everybody. There's a story for something. Your story is always getting written and rewritten. And we all have a voice, and all those voices are important. And it's just one of those skills that you don't want to just give an easy out for, but still respecting people with actual
I just wish we could make it, like, a lot of the fear is based of judgment, right? It's not fear exactly. of standing up in front of people.
Correct.
It's a fear of judgment, because you put yourself out there, you stand up in front of all of these people, and you're afraid of what they're going to think of you. You know, are you going to do something embarrassing? Is something terrible going to happen? And I feel like fear of judgment is just being human in general.
Right.
And so for most of us, not on the borders, but for most of us, there are ways that we can create a group where we can stand in front of them and know that, like no phones, no cameras, no, right? We can teach. I went into one of our children's classes in grade 8. They do all of these talks, right? They have to present. They have to do a big project, and they have to present them. And they're amazing projects, and they're amazing kids. But there were different levels of comfort being in front of people. From one kid who didn't plan anything, just stood up and talked, and he was hysterical and amazing. And to people who had scripted the entire thing and then were really anxious. And how we started it was saying, like, there's only, first of all, we always start feedback with something positive, and nobody here is perfect in any way. So we're going to look at, because some of the best projects ended up belonging to people who were the most nervous. So how did you kind of balance that out? And I found, like, the class learned to respect each other because they were able to see the benefits of each project and see the strength of each person presenting them and help each other to be stronger speakers in a few simple steps. And that was, a lot of it was a testament to the environment the teacher had created, where there was as little judgment as possible. Right. And there were rules around how you could communicate. And unfortunately, once you get to the workplace, you can't enforce those rules necessarily in the same way, but in school you can. So I guess that's what I see is why I want them to do it in school, because I think it can be more controlled and safe. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And our friends, Michael and Amy Port, that are the founders of Heroic Public Speaking, have that great line, right? You can be a critic or a performer. You can't be both. Yeah. And then having a safe space to do that is very important, because it's so vulnerable.
So I just wonder if people knew before they got up there that they would get only positive feedback to start, no one would take pictures, no one would pick up anything, like there would be no mention outside of those group of people about what had happened inside the conversation, how many of those people would still be cripplingly anxious to do it,
right,
in a safe space,
right?
And so that's where I think it's a space issue, not so much a, you know, making people do it issue.
When we used to do the student ones, everybody would talk and they'd stand there and the class would give feedback, and they'd open with, what did you like about it and what can they work on?
Yeah.
And that was it. Two pieces of feedback for each person. Everybody got that feedback. Everybody had something to work on and something they liked.
Yeah. And see, that makes, that immediately takes the anxiety level down.
Right.
And not if you have crippling anxiety, but if you're just a regular person, most of us are anxious speaking.
Yeah. Most people are. And that part was, the advice was that nobody cares, you know, if you screw up. Nobody. Then nobody wants you to screw up in the audience. Nobody. And most people just want you to get through the topic. You know, they want you to finish. They want you to be done. And I always say it's not about you. It's about the content. And we're there to pass off some learning items, some principles. You just happen to be the vehicle that time to do it. If you have any stories about yourself, about speaking or anything else, please shoot them over to us anytime. We'd love to hear them. Maybe stories that worked for you or didn't, or techniques that helped you. We have learned, though, the one technique you don't want to do, obviously, is to... you know, picture everybody naked. That just never works well. Do you want to do a made up word?
Yep.
All right.
Don't make any sense. Don't mean no offense. It brings laziness. What is all this craziness?
So this made up word comes from Julia Worcester, who actually put it on Twitter this morning. And the made up word is Meanderthal. And I love it.
Meanderthal. With an M as in Mary.
She said it was her husband's favorite made-up word.
Meanderthal. Wayne?
I have no clue.
Somebody just meandering through life, maybe? I don't know. I haven't seen the answer for this. So
she said that it was someone wandering around totally unaware of anything around them, often on a smartphone.
Meanderthal. Well done.
Thank you, Julia. I'm going to send you a DM today, and we'll send you whichever of our books you would like.
No, you don't send her a DM. She's got to hear the episode.
Oh, I have to wait?
Yeah. No, we've never sent. We've never told anybody we've used their word.
Oh, all right.
They have to hear it on the episode and come to us.
Julia, you posted it today. That I hope you're listening, books. Julia.
Yeah. So, and by the way, so if you're wondering, if you're new, we got a lot of new people. I've been doing a lot of speaking in the past couple of weeks. 10 talks in 2 weeks. It's a lot of people at the
nice
end of the
talk.
Nice
to see you. How are you?
Good to see you, sugar.
Yeah, I haven't seen you.
It's been good. You've changed. Yeah. Did you get something with your hair? Good. Yeah. Wayne's grown a bit, right? Yeah. Some new tat.
I snuck in another kid and two other dogs, and you haven't even noticed.
Okay. That's who that was. I thought it was an in-home barista that we had. So if you're wondering what the made-up word is, and by the way, welcome to the show. It's always like this. We do a made-up word is one of our favorite parts of the show, is where the listener, sends us words in that you run across, and usually they're made up, usually a combination of two words, and you're like, come on. That was a good one. Usually they're not good.
No, Neanderthal is a great word.
But usually it's a marketing term or company that put it together that made it want to make it sound cool. If we choose your word because you tweeted it to us or sent it on Facebook or through on marketing.com, if we use your word on the show, we'll send you any...
Allison will not DM you.
She will not DM you. We'll send you any one of our books you get to pick. We'll ship it right out to you through Amazon. Also available in Amazon 4-star stores. I'm not sure if it actually is. And we'll send it off to you. And also, by the way, you are one of the seven. That's right. You're one of our seven listeners now. And welcome to the show, one of the seven. That's our rallying cry for our people. So that is our show. Next week, we have some even more incredible things to talk about. Train wrecks, awesomeness, and even another podcast that we love. So please join us. Emma, thank you.
We love you, Emma.
I can stop singing Adele now. And move on to Cool in the Gang. Talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.